Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Really excited to bring a medical professional on the show today, an outstanding neurologist from Independence Health, and that is Dr. Kathleen Adams. We're so excited to have you on the show. Thank you, Dr. Adams.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, so we're talking about Stroke Awareness Month, which happens in May, and this is a really important topic, and I know it's near and dear to your heart. Obviously, you chose the path of neurology. So let's start by talking about you. Let's hear about where you grew up and your decision to become a neurologist. And then if you could talk about what education and training that took, then we can talk about how you landed at Independence Health.
All right. So I originally grew up in a small town in Kansas, and not really anyone early on in my life that was in the medical field. When I was in middle school, I think my grandmother actually went back to school. And mind you, I was in middle school, and she went back to school and got her RN and became a nurse. And so that was the only person really that I had known that had been in the medical field. I went to undergraduate at Fort Hays State University, which most people don't know where it is, but it's in a town called Hays, Kansas. And it's like your one gas stop between Kansas and Colorado. So if you're driving through on I-70. So I went to undergraduate there, and I had always known that I wanted to go into medicine. From the time I was a small child, I would tell people that I wanted to be a pediatrician. That obviously changed. I always knew I wanted to go into medicine. My third year of undergraduate, I started making the rounds, doing applications, and I was accepted to the University of Medicine in Kansas City, and that is an osteopathic school. I actually, my brother and I both went to that medical school together, and we graduated in the same graduating class, which was fun. Yeah. So we lived together for many years, and it was great competition, which I think really pushed us to do the best that we possibly could. Our third and fourth years of medical school, the school sends you out to do rotations all over the place. My brother stayed in Kansas City, and I went to Oklahoma City and did my last 2 years of medical school there, doing all my rotations, meeting a lot of really great people out there. And I actually stayed there and did my internship at the hospital that I worked at in Oklahoma City. Had a great time there, learned a whole lot. We were in a community hospital. There was a lot of really sick patients that we saw, and it was a great opportunity. And that's where I met the neurologist that really set that apart for me. And I knew that after working with him and after him teaching me the basics of neurology and what you could learn with just an examination when you're doing neurology, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I put through applications and did interviews and the whole process. I matched, which is a whole big ordeal, but matched at Hershey Medical Center. So that's how I got to Pennsylvania. Matched there, did my 3 years of residency there because I had already done my internship. And I finished neurology residency. And after working in neurology for those 3 years, I realized that I wasn't made to be an outpatient doctor. There are people that are made to do that and people that are not made to do that. And I realized that I needed to go the direction of something that would put me in the hospital the vast majority of my time because that's what I enjoyed. And so I actually chose to stay at Hershey and I did a fellowship in stroke in vascular neurology. So I did a fourth year there in Hershey and trained to be a stroke neurologist. After that, I stayed at Hershey and worked as a stroke attending for 9-ish years. Then we made the decision. My husband is local to the Greensburg area, and we made the decision to come out here closer to family, so we had more help. We have four daughters, so the more help, the better. And that's how I came to Independence, which was previously Excella. And when I joined in 2020, we were Excella, and they were looking for a neuro hospitalist, and they needed somebody for the stroke program to run the stroke program, and it was really a perfect fit. So we've been doing that ever since, and we really enjoy the area and we enjoy being here.
Well, I mean, I'm going to make a little joke. I mean, four daughters could cause a stroke, so it is a wonderful thing.
That's the truth.
How old are your girls?
I have a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old, and an 8-year-old.
Wow. And so that's a lot. And then you take care of patients in the hospital. Are most of your patients, I would imagine, being direct admit or through the emergency room?
Usually our patients are through the emergency room. The vast majority of them are. We will occasionally have patients that come in, but typically with how the flow of patients works, they're almost all coming through the emergency department, even if they were sent over from clinic.
So you really rely on that emergency room staff to make the call. I mean, they're specially trained to make sure that they know what's happening.
Yes, and they're great at what they do, and they know what they're doing, and they are my right hand, basically.
So once they come into the hospital, then you see a patient.
Correct.
Okay,
They
so go
go
ahead.
ahead. No, you're fine.
I was just thinking about the process. So what would be a typical, well, I know that there are characteristics of strokes, but of course every patient is different. But what are some of the main symptoms that you see, particularly here in Western Pennsylvania? Because I know those comorbidities matter, right? I know that smoking and diabetes and all of those things add up. So there have to be some common symptoms that you're seeing in the ER.
Yeah, and the way we actually teach patients to look for those symptoms is a mnemonic. I try to teach all patients, not just patients either, family members and kids. I've had, children identify strokes in their grandparents because they were taught the mnemonic. And so really everybody should know it. But the one that we use right now is called BFAST. BFAST stands for balance for the B. You want to look if somebody's really off balance, they're running into walls, they're acting like they're drunk. That could be a sign of a stroke. And eyesight is one that has been newly added as well because you can lose eyesight and that could be the sign of a stroke. And it typically is loss of eyesight, not so much I have blurred vision, but loss of eyesight, double vision sometimes we will see with strokes. The F stands for face. So that's that classic I have a droopy face, and one side works, but the other side doesn't. And so we look for that. Arm is the A. So we always tell people to have somebody pick up their arms, and if their arms drop on one side but it stays up on the other side, that one-sided weakness is very classic for stroke. S is for speech. So there's a couple of different things that we notice with strokes with speech. One is dysarthria. So their speech is really slurred. It's hard to understand, almost unintelligible sometimes. And then the other thing with speech is you can also have what's called an aphasia. So that's the patient either can't produce the words they need to, but they still sort of know what's going on, or they have no idea what anyone is saying to them. They can't process that speech. So those things you have to look for as well. And sometimes the patients just seem really confused, but really it's just that they're not getting the right words out or they're not understanding the words that are coming in to their brain. And then the last one, T, stands for time. And time is very important because time is what we base all of our interventions on. So we have interventions that we can do on patients. We have medication we can use and, procedures that we can do, but it's all time-based. So you want to get there as soon as you notice the symptoms, as soon as somebody notices that things aren't right, you got to get to the hospital as quickly as possible. And I say, if you are concerned about a stroke, you need to call an ambulance because that's going to get you there quicker.
Wow. Why don't you tell us what happens? What is really happening medically during a stroke? How do you explain that to people?
So that's kind of a loaded question. So there's different types of strokes. So it depends on which type of stroke we're talking about. But the most common type of stroke is called an ischemic stroke, and that's where there's a blood clot that's blocking a blood vessel, and you're not getting blood to that area of the stroke. So what happens is something blocks that vessel, or the vessel gets weak and closes off. Maybe it's a small little baby blood vessel that's just old and weak, and it closes off. But something's blocking that blood flow to that area of the brain. And when that happens, the blood is not perfusing that area of the brain. It's not getting what it needs. And so that tissue dies. And the inability to use that tissue disrupts the neurons that are signaling elsewhere. And when those neurons aren't getting through that they need to, depending on where that insult is to the brain, that tells us the symptoms you have. So the fun thing about neurology is I can tell you exactly where it is just based on the symptoms that you're having.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
It
And
is. It really
then the but the medication, so obviously the goal is to open that flow of blood back as quickly as possible to save as much tissue as possible. Is there ever is you know is it always permanent? Is it ever regenerating? Is there ever improvement? How does that work?
So I always tell patients the biggest thing is to treat you aggressively early on. So if you get there within the time window that we have, which is 4.5 hours from onset, we can use a medication that tries to break up blood clots. And the medication that we use is called tenecteplase. But it's sort of a strong blood thinner. It breaks up blood clots. And that's to try and open up those blood vessels. The earlier we get to it, the better, because you lose thousands upon thousands of brain cells every second. So you always want to be as quick as possible with, getting interventions on board. And it's not always permanent. The damage after a stroke has been done, but it doesn't mean that your brain can't work around that. And I always tell patients, you can look at a small child who had a huge stroke when they were little, and you'd never even know it because their brain was able to reascend neurons to other places to perform the tasks that they need to. So your brain, although it may be slow to heal, will reroute those paths, and you will improve from the stroke. So it's not like I diagnose and then the work is done, because you've got to put in the therapy and you've got to put in the time, and you can get better after a stroke. Some people have TIAs, which a lot of people know as mini strokes. And those are patients that come in and look like strokes, and you think they're having a stroke, but their symptoms resolve really quickly. The vast majority in about an hour, but within 24 hours, and they don't actually leave a mark on the brain. So with a stroke, we see a mark on the brain with an MRI, and with a TIA, we don't. And those patients resolve back to themselves. So they get completely back to themselves, without any intervention for the most part, typically.
So that's just sort of like a narrowing, like it hasn't been completely cut off, or it opens back up right away.
Point, your body is going to try its darndest to try and get that thing open, that blood vessel back open, even without us intervening. Your body's going to try and do it itself as well. So it may just be that you either had a weak blood vessel that closed off for a period of time and then opened back up, or you had a little blood clot that your body broke up on its own, and it just didn't last long enough to leave a mark on your brain.
And are all strokes of the brain?
So no, they are not. You can also have strokes of your spinal cord, because you do have blood vessels that feed the spinal cord that you can, block off as well. That can be something that we see with certain surgical procedures, or, you throw little blood clots everywhere from certain things. You can have what looks like strokes in other organs as well. We don't typically call those strokes. But the big one that we deal with in neurology is the brain. And then on occasion, we will see strokes of the spinal cord as well.
Wow. I mean, this is, so very interesting. And then, what would you say maybe the top 3 to 5 causes of strokes are that you see?
So it really is those risk factors that you had mentioned early on. So, Patients who have those comorbidities, they have things like high blood pressure or high cholesterol or diabetes. Those are what put you at risk, especially if they're not treated appropriately. If they're treated appropriately, we can decrease that risk of stroke. But if you have all these things that aren't being treated, that's when you really have a higher risk of stroke. The other one that I'll mention is atrial fibrillation, a funny heart rhythm that some people can go in and out of, and that dramatically increases your risk of stroke. So that's something that, if there's concern that you maybe have a funny heart rhythm or you have palpitations a lot and we end up seeing a stroke, that's something that we really have to look into to try and diagnose as well.
Well, I mean, this is great information. We're learning a lot because it is a stroke awareness initiative that's happening across the country in May. I'm talking today with Dr. Kathleen Adams, a neurologist at Independence Health. She is doing a wonderful job taking care of patients who are coming in through the emergency room with these really emergent and critical symptoms. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the effort to create awareness, how important it is, and we will talk about that when we come back right after the break. Stay with us.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy, here today with Dr. Kathleen Adams. She's a neurologist at Independence Health, talking to us today about Stroke Awareness Month in May. I mean, so critical, right? I mean, especially for, I always think about like people who don't live with someone else, right? And they're by themselves a lot. And sometimes probably don't even notice the facial drooping or the slurred speech, right? And that's a problem. And so kind of creating that awareness, whether it be looking in the mirror or checking in on these people from time to time, is really going to be critical to the success of any further treatment, right?
It is, yeah, and that's one of the things that we always talk about wanting to get into the hospital as soon as you can so we can intervene. But some of these patients, they don't know when things started. Well, I didn't talk to anybody at all yesterday, so I don't know when my slurred speech started. Or, the only person at home with me is my cat. They
Right.
didn't notice I, had dysarthria or I had trouble with my words. So really having somebody that checks in on you on occasion, or if you don't feel right, checking in on yourself. But some intuition of looking at what may be going on as well. If you look up and you realize that, oh, I shaved my face, but I just seems a little off, looking at that a little bit closer and really getting yourself evaluated if there's any concern.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember working at the hospital years ago. I mean, this would be more, about 10 years ago. And we all had to learn the signs and symptoms of a stroke, the acronym that you talked about. And then what was implemented at then Exela, now Independence, was really a complete lockdown of protocol. Like, these are the exact steps you're taking with this patient to treat them as quickly as possible. So, why don't you talk a little bit about Independence and the qualifications and how really lucky and blessed, or however you want to put it, to have these kinds of resources available in a small community?
So Independence is now five hospitals. We have a number of really great resources here, and we are a primary stroke center here at Westmoreland Hospital, at Frick Hospital, and at Latrobe Hospital, as well as Butler Hospital. So all four of those sites are primary stroke centers, which means that we all have a protocol. We know exactly what's going to happen when you come in and you look like you're having a stroke. Everything runs the same way all the time. We have access to a neurologist 24 hours a day, via telemedicine with UPMC if we're concerned that this patient, may need to go someplace else to have intervention performed, or by myself or Dr. Haken, we're the neurohospitalists, and there's always access to a neurologist, which is really lucky for some hospitals this size, because the vast majority of hospitals that are, smaller, like Latrobe or Frick, or even Butler, they maybe don't have access to a neurologist all the time. And with the implementation of telestroke, that has really, you know, improved stroke care dramatically throughout the United States.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. I mean, because you know, you're one person, you can't be at five hospitals at once. So, I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
Correct. Yeah. But they have the ability to reach us at any time. And we have telemedicine with UPMC, and we've got a great, you know, collaboration with them, and they help us and, you know, take our patients seriously. And if those patients need something that we can't offer here, we're able to get them someplace where they can get it.
Perfect. Okay. So now they're in the hospital, they're under your care. Hopefully you've isolated whatever issue that's happening, and that the care for Independence Health doesn't stop there, does it? I mean, there's a process for discharge, and then what happens next?
So there's a process through everything. You know, we have standard workups that we go through for all of our stroke patients, trying to figure out what the cause of the stroke was and making sure that we're modifying all of your risk factors that you have to really decrease your risk of future stroke. Then when you're ready to be discharged, therapy is going to see you, see what they recommend. Some patients may be doing really well and they can go home with maybe some home therapy or outpatient therapy. And if they don't, if they need a little bit more, we have the ability to send them to inpatient rehab. And Epic Rehab at Latrobe Hospital is a place that we send a lot of our stroke patients to. They get a lot of therapy early on, which is when you want to really push your brain to recover. And they're able to, you know, for the most part, walk out of there, get out of there, and go home. And that's the ultimate goal, is to get our patients back home again.
Is age a factor with the severity of strokes?
Well, not just with the severity, but also the risk for stroke. So the older you get, the higher risk you are for having a stroke. And that's one of those risk factors I can't change, unfortunately. It would be nice if we could, but we can't. But severity, maybe, because you're more likely to have things like AFib as you get older. And the big thing is recovery is harder when you're older. So as we get older, our brain takes longer to heal and it's harder. And because it takes longer and we may not have as long at some age groups, we maybe don't get as good as some of our younger patients. But definitely age plays a big role in everything that happens with a stroke.
Another question about age: does a stroke essentially age your brain as well? Probably your body too.
Yeah, I mean, it does take a lot out of a patient for sure. And you have to put in a lot of effort. And I don't know that I would necessarily say it ages your brain, but your brain knows that stroke happened and it never completely goes away. So even if you recover beautifully from your stroke and you're back to yourself completely, you have to think about the fact that that area of damage never goes away. You don't regenerate that area of your brain. So if something else happens, so say I get COVID or I get a pneumonia or I get a urinary tract infection, your brain doesn't compensate for that area of your brain not being the way it used to be. And so you may notice that, oh, I got really sick, and now my left arm that I had completely recovered before is now a little bit weak. And I notice that I'm not quite where I was. You bounce back again from that after we treat whatever's going on. Sometimes it's just really bad stress and your brain just can't compensate for that. Or I got super dehydrated. But illness a lot of times is what really brings out those stroke symptoms again.
There is an impact not just on the patient, but on the caregiver as well. And that can't be easy. That can lead to stress, anxiety. And, you know, that's part of Stroke Awareness Month, of making sure people know that there is support out there for caregivers, correct?
Correct. Yes. And it is, strokes don't affect one person. They really do affect a family. You know, if, you know, your friend, you're the primary caregiver for your friend and they had a stroke, that everyone that that person touches is affected by their stroke. And it can be very stressful and take a lot of time and effort and can really change your life. And we at Independence Health, we have a stroke support group that meets every month. We have the ability to sit down and the patients and families come and they're able to talk and socialize and sometimes even just get things off their chest. Like, I'm really frustrated about this, or I can't get in to see a clinician and I really need this. And it really gives them that interaction that they need. Our stroke support group sometimes is able to bring in guest speakers. So I've spoken to the stroke support group and we've had therapy and we've done fun things like planting succulent gardens and different things. So there's a lot involved with that. And my stroke coordinator, Josh Adams, runs our stroke support group and he's there at all the meetings and he tries to plan fun things for everybody and really to give them some place to go that they can be with like-minded people who are also suffering and have, you know, worked through the effects of a stroke.
What is it about your job and the advances that you're seeing in medicine that gives you hope?
So I love neurology because we know so little. And it really is every year we're coming up with something new and we're finding something new and we're able to treat somebody better than we ever thought possible. You know, the interventions that we can do on patients and how small blood vessels now we can open back up. It really is amazing every year seeing the differences. And I go to our big stroke meeting every year, the International Stroke Conference, and we're able to see all the research that's going into this as well. And, you know, good people are out there and they're really trying to find ways that we can make stroke less common and ways that we can treat stroke better. And we have such advances. And you'll see it all over the news. You know, the one gentleman who couldn't use his hand and now he had this implant and now he's able to use his hand again. It's really amazing. We've grown by leaps and bounds. Since I started in medicine, we've grown by leaps and bounds.
And it's going to continue that way, I think, every year. Yeah. Every year.
Nobody's at this point. We've got way too far to go still.
Way too far to go, for sure. I mean, strokes can be dangerous. They can be deadly. Top five killer and a leading cause of adult disability in America. But awareness, just like we're talking about today, making sure people understand the signs and symptoms. And, you know, as you said, with the exception of age, prevention is key. And that link between the heart and the brain, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Prevention is huge. And I always tell people, you can't skimp on that because prevention is how you don't end up in the hospital. You don't see me. Although I'd love to see you, you don't want to see me because that means you're in the hospital. Seeing your primary care doctor regularly, having your yearly checkups, getting your cholesterol checked, making sure your blood sugars are still good, making sure that if you start feeling like you've got palpitations or funny heart rhythms, you get that checked out. Don't ignore those things. Make sure you're on top of your own care because that's how we prevent this from happening.
Wow. Dr. Kathleen Adams is a neurologist at Independence Health. No matter how you look at it, blessed or lucky, we are definitely blessed and lucky to have you in this community, leading the effort to combat stroke. We thank you for your time to talk about stroke awareness, so important. I would urge anyone who would like to read more about Dr. Adams or strokes, stroke prevention, stroke treatment, and the support for families who are dealing with stroke recovery to visit Independence Health's website. That's a very important key. And also, just as Dr. Adams said, making an appointment with a primary care physician because prevention is key. You can certainly do that by logging onto their website as well. Dr. Adams, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.